Welcome to the December 2016 installment of Industrial Heating Magazine's Vacuum Heat Treat Minute with Bill Jones, CEO of the Solar Atmospheres family of companies, and host Jim Nagy, president of Solar Manufacturing. Solar Manufacturing is the innovative leader in advanced vacuum heat treat furnaces. This month's Vacuum Heat Treat Minute podcast is entitled Electric Power Company Rebate Programs. Here's our host, Jim Nagy, to introduce the topic of today's podcast.
Thank you for joining us today for this podcast on vacuum heat treating operations. Vacuum furnaces offer many metallurgical advantages to heat treaters. The Solar Atmospheres R&D team collaborates with the solar manufacturing engineers to find ways to lower electric power consumption by improving the efficiency of our vacuum furnaces. In the process of investigating better operational efficiencies, Solar has learned about electric power rebate programs offered by various power companies across the country. In addition to benefiting Solar Atmospheres heat treating operations nationwide, some of these rebate programs have been accessed by Solar Manufacturing's customers with the assistance from Solar. In today's podcast, you will hear Bill Jones interviewing Rial Fredette, technical consultant to Solar with several decades of vacuum furnace experience. Rial has invested a considerable amount of time leading the collaboration effort to apply for the power rebate programs. So here is part one of two, focusing on the work Solar has accomplished and continues to develop in hot zone efficiencies to reduce electric power consumption, not only to lower operational costs and improve performance, but also to win the rebates offered.
Rial, tell us, what are these electrical power rebate programs, and what are they all about, and how can we take advantage of them in our industry?
The rebate programs that we've been involved with started approximately 2 or 3 years ago, relating to our new facilities that we put into California, as well as some of the modifications we did at our Hermitage plant in Pennsylvania. And the rebates there had to do more with how we modified certain areas of the plant to improve power consumption and so forth. However, recently, with some of our customers, as well as within our own organization, we've been approached lately on equipment modifications that we can make and so forth that might improve the efficiency of our equipment and reduce power consumption for each cycle that is run in our furnaces. We have provided programs with a couple of our customers on new equipment, and we've demonstrated with the power companies how we can show considerable savings on these equipments with these modifications. And these have resulted in some pretty significant paybacks in rebates from the power companies to reduce consumption.
How did we get involved with this at Solar Manufacturing? And how have we interacted with some of our companies and some of the power companies?
Well, primarily, Solar Manufacturing has been involved with working with customers and demonstrating how they can save power in various cycle configurations. Primarily, savings have been shown through a typical technical evaluation of each part of the furnace equipment and demonstrated how, for a given typical cycle, we can reduce power consumption throughout the cycle. And this has resulted in very significant numbers when you look at it over a yearly usage of the equipment. And implementing our changes that we make on the equipment to improve these results is a reasonable payback in a short period of time. And so the results of the improvements certainly continue for years beyond.
The power companies are looking for something. And what is it in your mind, Rial? Why are they even considering this and in giving payback monies to a user like our company, Solar Atmospheres, or any other heat treating company?
I think basically, for instance, our large furnace that we put into Hermitage. This creates a considerable larger peak demand for that particular area because of the size of the furnace and the power required to operate that furnace in several aspects. Not only the heating power, but the motors and everything else that's used in that equipment, considerable power is used. And particularly that energy group came to us and wanted to know if we could somehow reduce the power consumption to further reduce the requirements of that particular plant. And we demonstrated to them a technical evaluation and write-up of what we did in that furnace to improve several areas to reduce the power consumption by a considerable number. And they were very pleased with our consideration of what we did, and which is resulting in a rebate that we will receive from the power company.
Well, also in the fact of our Hermitage plant, the power line that was running from the utility company, we and a couple of other customers had that power line almost loaded to 100%. So we too were forced into conservation. Otherwise, they were looking to us to build a new power line into that plant, which would have cost us about $1 million. So we had to look to ways of improving efficiency of our existing equipments, and we also had to look for ways of monitoring our power and properly allocating which furnace was going to operate at what time and that sort of thing. And that's sort of some of the things that we were looking at, and we were forced into that situation at Hermitage. And we even have a bigger problem in California, where the actual power is not available. And they're not interested, at least in the Los Angeles area, they're not interested in building any additional power generation. So we have to cooperate with the electric power company in order to survive. All of our companies, not just us, but our competition and big industry, have to get into this sort of a program. All right. What I'd like to ask you are some of the areas that we can demonstrate power savings, not only for ourselves, but to the power company, in order that we can get a power saving and rebate, dollar rebatements, because that's what the bottom line is. So let me first of all ask you, one of the most, the obvious is the power absorption of the hot zone to operate the furnace. What are the contributing components to the hot zone that we can make improvements?
We've done a lot of work over the last 3 or 4 years on improving our hot zones to reduce radiation losses from the hot zone out to the chamber wall. Basically, the power that goes into the furnace is not only the power required to heat the load, but it's the power required to maintain the hot zone at a certain temperature. And the losses that are occurring through the insulation and then radiating back to the wall of the furnace are what we are trying to reduce. Now, we have studied many different insulation configurations, as well as recently some very new board materials that we think are very optimistic in further reducing our hot zone losses. We now have studied these materials enough to be able to place into the hot zone configuration based on what the application is. For higher temperatures, we can introduce different combinations of insulation, therefore reduce the total energy loss to the wall of the furnace. This is quite a complicated subject, but yet we feel that we are now improving our furnaces to the point where we're doing much better than we did several years ago.
Okay, now you have touched on one of the prime factors in improving the efficiency of the furnace is the insulation. Touch on for us a couple of other points with respect to thermal conductivity, particularly with respect to the support members of the insulation, and that's the I think it's the main question I want to ask you to comment on our newer designs today versus what we did, let us say, 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay, the hot zone basically insulation is supported in a large ring assembly, and the ring assembly on the outside is what radiates to the furnace wall. And in the radiation equations, the important thing is that the difference in temperature between the radiating hot zone wall, ring, whatever the package is that supports the insulation, and the chamber wall is that these temperature differences are raised to the fourth power. So therefore, a small increment of temperature change raised to the fourth power creates a huge radiation loss. And we're trying to reduce the temperature of that ring supporting package to reduce the total radiation. Now, the ring itself is not only the heat that's lost through the insulation to the support ring, but it's also various components within the hot zone that support the insulation, that support the elements, that are hearth pins that support the hearth itself within the chamber. So you have a lot of these penetrations that conduct heat from the internal to the ring support. In the last couple years, we've been endeavoring to reduce these number of conducting members to further reduce the ring temperature and make the hot zone a lot more efficient. And again, this is an ongoing program. And I mentioned just briefly that we think we have a new board material that we are very optimistic that we can further reduce all of these conducting members because the board material itself is very rigid and self-supporting. So hopefully the future is very optimistic as far as further reducing our losses.
I've been in this business, as you know, for some 40 plus years. And up until a few years ago, I was more or less looking at the first couple of layers of the insulation system, whatever it might be, as being the most important and where the major temperature differentials would occur. Now, actually, in your work over the last couple of years, you have shown that not to be true. So I'd like you to comment on that.
We have found that there are ways of reducing the insulation loss conduction through graphite felt, for instance, by inserting foils between the layers of the graphite felt. However, there are certain disadvantages in cost as well as manufacturing to do that. However, in certain applications, we will add a layer of foil between the rear layers of felt to reduce that back conduction to that ring, that supporting ring of the hot zone.
Okay, I understand that, and I know that's what we've learned, that, and that's one of the things that has come out of the recent work we've done. Now, comment on just a moment. We've done both laboratory work and to substantiate where these improvements can result. Now, you've also done some thermal calculations. And give us the name of the equations that you've used to do some of those calculations.
Basically, the radiation calculations are using the Stefan-Boltzmann equation, which, again, relates to the temperature difference between the radiating surface and the receiving surface. And also, one critical point in all that is also the emissivity of the radiating surface. Now, emissivity is a very important factor, and it can vary all over the place depending on the material that's radiating as well as the condition of the radiating material, whether it's been oxidized or whether it's bright, shiny, and so forth. So there are so many variables in the equation. And again, for our studies, we have to use somewhat of a constant emissivity, although it's not constant, in the actual application of the equipment.
Right. Now, just comment for a moment on what we have learned about the emissivity of the cold wall and the effectiveness of whatever that coating might be on the cold wall itself.
Well, on the cold wall, we have tried different materials to try to, quote, change the emissivity by making it brighter, shinier, or whatever you want to call that. And it's been effective to a point. However, after several cycles, all of a sudden, the wall is coated again with all kinds of contaminating, oxidizing, and coating materials that changes the emissivity back to where we would not like it to be. But it's a condition of the application. Our cycles create contaminating atmospheres, I guess you could say.
Yes, this is true, that we boil out certain oils and binders and that sort of thing, and they always end up in the cold wall area. Now, this issue, from what you've just said, it might be that we'll just ignore it because it's only going to become dirty and contaminated anyway. However, not every cycle in things that we process end up with a severe situation. And many of our furnaces that are processing very clean and bright materials, for instance, the titanium products and many, do not severely deposit contaminants that reduce the emissivity on that cold wall. So it is still worth the effort to try to improve that, to reduce the emissivity so that we have less energy absorptive, let's say, coatings on or media on the cold wall itself. Years ago, it was pointed out to me that the best receiving, the best coating possible on that back wall would be gold. So it was recommended to me at one time that we gold plate the back, the ID of the cold wall. Well, that's obviously, how are we ever in the world going to gold plate the ID of a vacuum chamber that might be 50 inches in diameter and or 60 inches in diameter and even more, greater, and maybe 50 feet deep? It's impossible. We can't get it into a plating tank. So we have to use other media. Rial, we understand in purchasing a new furnace that buying engineers should be mindful of the energy efficiency of the hot zone and the various variable speed drives and other devices that can be used to reduce electric power draw or to reduce maintenance costs for a new furnace. Now, what do you think about somebody who has a furnace that's 20 years old? And they would like to think about it. Well, what can we do about this furnace? And is there any hope for this other than taking it to the boneyard?
Well, I think a furnace 20 years old might be a little difficult to implement some of these things. However, it's not, vacuum furnaces, for instance, we know that after a given number of years, the hot zones basically have to be rebuilt. If they were to come to us to want the hot zone rebuilt, there's nothing that says we couldn't modify the hot zone to put in some of our new improvements on reducing the power losses through the insulation and so forth. And now that's certainly an area that the consideration. Now regarding some of the earlier years, for instance, with the diffusion pump heaters, there's nothing that says that on a given furnace that we couldn't put in our, what we call our Consovac, our silicon control rectifier system, to implement idling these heaters when they're not in full need during the cycle. Now, again, these are all things that would cost the user an initial investment, but yet we could demonstrate easily a payback within a short period of time. So there are things we could do with existing customers and existing equipment. However, I think the rebate programs are probably a lot more directed towards new furnace purchases.
Yes, I think you're right about that. It's going to be a little hard. I guess one could put together a program that would say, well, we'll make these improvements in the hot zone, we'll make these improvements in the vacuum pumping system and apply for a rebate. But it's going to be more difficult on an older furnace than it would be on a new one.
This concludes the first part of a discussion on electric power company rebate programs. Please join us again in the near future for our next Vacuum Heat Treat Minute podcast when we conclude our discussion of electric rebate programs.
The Vacuum Heat Treat Minute podcasts are underwritten by Solar Manufacturing, the innovative leader in advanced vacuum heat treat furnaces. You can find us on the web at solarmfg.com. We encourage our listeners to search the resources tab on our websites for technical resources available for download through the solar companies. Thank you for listening, and be sure to look for our next podcast for another informative vacuum heat treat minute.